This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 53, White Zombie, Part 2.
The future, monsieur.
Hi there, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with the creepiness of White Zombie, starring the legendary Bela Lugosi. His character here of Legendre probably doesn't sound too different from the role that defined him not long before, Count Dracula. And that's the way most of his roles went, because that's pretty much how he talked all the time. He was a very successful actor in his native Hungary before having to flee the revolution. And when he settled in New York, initially he stuck with other Hungarian actors in their own language until he could master English. He found his big break on stage in Dracula and was pretty much the third choice to star in the film version. But once he won that, the die was cast. Though he tried working in other kinds of films, most notably in Ninotchka, his thick accent and his reputation kept him in horror films all the way to his last, the notorious Plan 9 from Outer Space. That was also an example of his penchant for not being too selective about his projects, and this film is another example of that. After all, the Halperin brothers were independent and were making the movie on a shoestring. Word is, Lugosi was a bit annoyed he'd settled for such a modest paycheck for the project because it ended up being a big hit. Lugosi's Legendre is a sugar mill owner in Haiti who has stolen secrets from witch doctors to create a race of zombies to do his work. When plantation owner Beaumont asks for his help to steal the lovely Madeline from her new husband, Neil, Legendre gives him a potion, which renders her, to the best of our knowledge, dead, so he can make her one of the undead. The last thing we heard was Neil's cry of agony when he found Madeline's crypt empty. So, let's find out what becomes of her in the conclusion of White Zombie. Later.
There's two explanations that strike me. Either the body was stolen by members of a death cult that use human bones in their ceremonies, or else...
Or else what?
She's not dead.
Neil sits in front of Dr. Brunner's desk.
Not dead? Are you mad?
Brunner stands.
I saw her die. The doctor signed a certificate. I saw them bury her.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I'm not mad. But I've lived in these islands for a good many years. And I've seen things with my eyes that made me think I was crazy. There's superstitions in Haiti that the natives brought here from Africa.
He picks up his pipe.
Some of them can be traced back as far as ancient Egypt. And beyond that yet, in the countries that was old when Egypt was young.
Yes, but what has that to do with Madeline?
Neil stands.
I kissed her as she lay there in the coffin. And her lips were cold.
Let me explain. Now, just a minute. I'll explain. Wherever there is a superstition, you will find there is also a practice. Now, do you remember what your driver told you the night he took you to Beaumont House?
Oh, about those horrible creatures we saw.
Yeah.
He said they were corpses, yeah, taken from their grave.
That's what now is. Now, that's the superstition. Now for the practice. The ghouls that steal the dead corpses from the grave are supposed to put him there in the first place.
Do you mean that Madeline was murdered so that somebody could steal her dead body?
Ah, nonsense. No. Not her body, yes, but not her dead body. That's what I mean.
Brunner sits again.
Well, surely you don't think she's alive in the hands of natives. Oh, no, better dead than that.
Excuse me, please. Have you got a match?
Neil finds one in his pockets.
Thank you.
He lights his pipe with it as Neil paces, thinking.
You don't believe that, do you?
Say, there's been lots of people that's been pronounced dead that came alive again and lived for years. Now, if nature can play pranks like that, why isn't it possible to play pranks with nature?
Oh, I don't know.
Brunner stands.
Your driver believed he saw dead men walking. He didn't. What he saw was men alive and everything, but this...
He points to his head.
And this.
And his heart, then turns to a bookshelf.
Oh, the whole thing has me confused. I just can't understand it.
I don't blame you.
He peers at a book he's taken down.
I don't blame you. I've been trying for years to get to the bottom of this thing. To separate what you call fact from fiction.
He drops the book on the desk.
The law of Haiti acknowledges the possibility of being buried alive. Here it is in the penal code.
He opens it and sits down.
I'll read it for you. It's in French. Do you speak French?
No.
Excuse me, please. Have you got a match?
Right here. Here's one.
Oh, thank you. I didn't see it. I'll translate it for you, if you could fit it. Article 1349.
He lights his pipe again.
The use of drugs or other practices which produce lethargic coma or lifeless sleep shall be considered attempted murder.
Yes.
Attempted.
Yes, I see.
Yeah. All right. If the person has been buried alive, the act should be considered murder, no matter what result follows.
Beaumont. Say, you said that you couldn't understand why he was so interested in that. Do you think he did this?
No, I think it's native work. Native work, exactly. Of course, if you want to, we can go to Beaumont's house first.
Brenner pounds the desk.
If I can get my hands on the devil that's responsible for this...
He stands.
I'll make him such an example that every witch doctor in Haiti will be shaken in his sandals.
But we can't do this alone. Can't the authorities help?
Authorities? Neil, my boy. You don't know these islands. The native authorities are afraid to meddle. I'm not. I got friends among the natives. They'll tell me things that no gendarme could ever get out of. Because I'm a preacher, they think I'm a magician.
He sits.
Before we get through with this thing, we may uncover sins that even the devil would be ashamed of. Oh, these witch doctors.
Later. A huge castle is cut into massive stone cliffs, looming high above the sea. Staircases wind around the outside of the castle, leading to a rocky landing with benches. In the great hall of the castle, Beaumont sits in a high-backed chair, gazing far across the room. He stands up. Then he walks to a sideboard, where he opens a jewelry box and takes something out of it. He gazes again across the room to Madeline, who plays the grand piano. While beautiful as ever, her gaze is empty. Beaumont approaches her and sits beside her on the piano bench.
Madeline.
He holds out the jewelry he took from the box, but she does not acknowledge it. Lowering his head, he stands. Then steps behind her and leans against another chair. He steps up to her and holds up the jewelry, a glittering necklace, which he lowers in front of her and places around her neck. Sitting beside her again, he finds no change in her expression. Then he holds out the dangling necklace, eliciting barely a blink from her.
Foolish things. They can't bring back the light to those eyes.
He lets the necklace drop.
I was mad to do this. But if you'd have smiled on me, I'd have done anything for you, given you anything. I thought that beauty alone would satisfy. But the soul is gone. I can't bear those empty, staring eyes.
He turns away from them. She stands.
Oh, forgive me, Madeline, forgive me.
She keeps staring into space.
I can't bear it any longer. I must take you back.
At the top of a set of stairs nearby.
Back to the grave, monsieur?
Turning to Legendre, Beaumont stands.
No. You must put the light back into her eyes and bring laughter to her lips. She must be gay and happy again.
You paint a charming picture, monsieur. One that I should like to see myself.
Legendre walks slowly down the stairs. Then he stares at Madeline, who crosses the room to him, still looking into space. Beaumont follows.
You must bring her back.
Aren't you a trifle afraid, monsieur? How do you suppose those eyes will regard you when the brain is able to understand?
Guilty, Beaumont watches as Legendre takes Madeline's hand and caresses it. When he lowers it and lets it go, thinking, she walks away from him to the stairs. Beaumont watches her ascend them, then turns to Legendre.
Better to see hatred in them than that dreadful emptiness.
Perhaps you're right. It would be a pity to destroy such a lovely love.
They watch her disappear around a corner.
Let's drink to the future of this flower. A glass of wine?
He claps, and Silver enters.
Silver, bring wine. We have a toast to drink.
With a nod and bow, Silver turns to a drinks tray on the sideboard and starts to pour. Then he delivers glasses to Legendre, who puts his hand over one of them as he picks it up and carries it to Beaumont, who accepts it. Legendre picks up the other glass normally, and they toast.
To the future, monsieur.
They drink. Beaumont looks at his glass quizzically and glances at Legendre. Then he sniffs the glass. Legendre peers at him.
Only pinpoint, monsieur. The flower. Or perhaps a glass of wine?
Panicked, Beaumont throws down his glass. He backs away from Legendre.
You devil! What are you trying to do to me?
I have other plans for Mademoiselle. And I'm afraid you might not agree.
Beaumont stares at him, stunned.
I have taken a fancy to you, monsieur.
Silver! Silver!
Silver raises his tray to strike Legendre, but he receives a powerful stare that makes him freeze. His view of Legendre starts to blur more and more. Terrified, Silver can't move. One by one, Legendre's zombie minions enter the great room, including Von Gerder, Lido, and the hulking Chauvin. They stalk toward Silver, who lowers the tray, and then pick him up, and carry him off. The stairs, led by Lado. Beaumont watches helplessly. Legendre faces him.
Don't!
On the outside of the castle, the zombies methodically carry Silver. And drop him in a torrent of seawater that carries him away. Then they walk off. Listening, Legendre smiles and raises his glass to Beaumont.
To the future, monsieur.
He drinks deeply. Legendre holds his glass with both hands and concentrates. Beaumont steps toward the Great Hall's window, where a vulture lands on one of the sills outside. He turns back to Legendre.
Vulture? You?
He steps closer to the bird, who waits. Then he returns to Legendre.
No! Not that! Not that!
Later, Dr. Brunner and Neil ride horses through the jungle.
They ought to be picking up an old rich doctor around here pretty soon. His name is Pierre. I've known him for years. He's a great old fellow. I don't know just where they find him.
Soon after, they ride with short, grizzled Pierre and cross paths with a native who leads an ox cart full of straw. The native stops and raises his hand at the witch doctor's approach, so the others stop as well.
Come, son. There are evil spirits in the road. I will give you an awanga.
Pierre puts a necklace around his neck.
And here is one for the ox.
The man takes it and goes back to his ox cart. Neil removes his pick helmet and rubs the back of his head.
Young man.
Hey, wait a minute. We can't afford to have you sick. Neil, why don't you go over there? We got a hard day before us tomorrow.
Dr. Brunner dismounts as Neil walks his horse away.
Now then, Pierre, come on. He's gone. We can talk.
It is a dangerous thing you asked me to do.
Oh, well, now listen, Pierre. We're old friends, you and me, and I want to go on.
Turn back. Before it is too late.
Oh, no. I've come too far to turn back now.
I'm too old to go all the way with you.
Well, listen. Can't you get somebody to go with us?
My people are afraid of the mountain.
Why?
Because it is called the land of the living dead.
Well, have you ever been there?
I am the only man that ever came from there alive. There is an evil spirit man that is called murder. Come, I will tell you all about what it is.
Later on the shore, Dr. Brunner peers up at the towering clifftop castle. Stepping over rocks and brush, he makes his way up the shore to Neil, who lies under a makeshift shelter beside a campfire. Taking off his hat, Brunner scratches his head, then drops the hat and picks up a canteen. He opens it and bends down to Neil. Lifting his head, he gets him to drink some water and lays him back down. Brunner stands and looks up at the cliffs, where he finds a vulture sitting on a branch. Brunner picks up a rock.
Vulture.
And throws it at the bird, hitting its claws. He watches it fly off.
Just as old Pierre said, a cloud of vultures always hovers over the house of the living dead.
Neil sits up.
Madeline, is she there?
No.
Oh, I must go and see. No.
Brunner bends down to him again.
Neil, my boy, please,
Please lie down and rest. Please.
Neil complies.
You'll feel stronger in the morning.
Brenner stands.
You rest.
He picks up his hat.
Let me go up and see what I can do.
Leaving Neil, he peers up again at the castle. Then he starts walking toward it. Later, the zombie Madeline steps out onto a balcony. The maids watch behind her.
Why is she so restless tonight? Perhaps she remembers something. We never remember anything when they are like that, no? Because Miss Cato.
The castle looms in the gathering darkness. As Madeline remains on the balcony, shrouded by fog, Neil remains on the shore below, but sits up, sensing something. He takes off his blanket and tries to get a foothold to stand. He smiles. Madeline keeps staring at the night from the balcony. Neil stands unsteadily.
Madeline! Madeline!
He steps forward. Madeline turns and retreats back into her room as Neil begins the long walk to the castle. In her room, when Madeline sits at a table, the maids approach her cautiously. The older one picks up a hairbrush. Stepping behind Madeline, she moves to brush her hair, but stops short, flustered. She tries again.
No, no, I can't.
You must. It's your turn.
Let her all the way.
The younger one glances toward the hall.
He might hear you. No, I can't stand it. I'm going to run away. He'll find you and make you like her.
Madeline turns her head toward the balcony. As Neil begins to stagger up myriad stone steps to the castle, Madeline stands and crosses her room. Neil wanders around a landing, almost falling into a hole in the sea below. He steps around it to continue his search. Madeline emerges on the balcony again. In the great hall, Legendre approaches a table where Beaumont sits, bent over, curled up, and slack-jawed. He struggles to reach for a glass on the table, desperately trying to control his movements. But he knocks the glass over. Smug, Legendre sits across from Beaumont, who slumps back in his chair.
Can you still hear me?
Looking at him, Beaumont manages a nod.
It is unfortunate you are no longer able to speak. I should be interested to hear you describe your symptoms.
Beaumont can only keep looking at him as he picks up a new wax figure he resumes carving.
You see, you are the first man to know what is happening.
He taps wax from his knife.
None of the others did.
Beaumont strains to reach across the table to him and is able to touch the hand holding the wax figure. When he clutches the hand weakly, Legendre sets down the knife with the other hand and leans on it.
You refuse to shake hands once. I remember. Well, well.
He pats Beaumont's hand and releases himself from it.
We understand each other better now.
Picking up the figure and knife again, he continues his work. Beaumont pulls himself back. Meanwhile, Neil arrives at two doors. He opens the one nearest him and steps onto a ledge. He looks over it, far down to more seawater. Looking around, he closes the door behind him, then walks along the ledge to a few steps, which lead to another ledge, and more steps curling down along the wall, reaching the water's level. He finds his next path and follows it away from the water to the top of the stairs in the great hall. Still carving the figure, Legendre pauses. On the landing, Neil pauses as well, running a hand over his face and leaning against a wall. As Legendre senses his presence and sets down the figure, Neil collapses onto a bench. Legendre stands, looking toward the landing, and Beaumont watches him. Glancing at Beaumont, Legendre crosses the great hall to the stairs, then climbs them to find Neil passed out on the bench. He stares at the young man, then smiles. He puts his fingers together and curls them. Then he concentrates, staring with power and intensity. Lying on top of her bed, Madeline sits up. She gets off the bed and crosses her room to the door, which opens on its own. As she walks through it, Legendre walks down the stairs in the great hall. The door Neil had not gone through opens, and Madeline steps through to the door he did choose, which also opens by itself. She walks through it to the ledge above the sea. Staring straight ahead, she follows the same path Neil took down steps to another ledge and down more curling steps along the wall. While Legendre approaches Beaumont at the table, Madeline steps past Neil on the landing. She descends the stairs. Beaumont watches her cross the great hall to Legendre. As Beaumont looks up to her, his vision of her becomes blurry. Legendre looks down at her hands, and she reaches across the table. Beaumont tries to stop her from picking up the knife, but hasn't enough control. Legendre smirks at him as she holds up the knife. Then he directs his stare toward Neil. Madeline goes back to the stairs. Powerless, Beaumont looks up desperately at Legendre, who just raises his thick eyebrows. Beaumont shakes his head. On the landing, Madeline approaches Neil and stands over him, looking down at his neck, staring intensely again into space. Legendre again curls his fingers together. Looking down at Neil, Madeline raises the knife, but she lowers it as she raises her head, her gaze still empty, but now lost. Legendre sends his power again. Madeline focuses again on Neil's neck and raises the knife high. But a hand grabs her arm and makes her drop the knife. Legendre keeps his fingers curled, focusing more power. But Madeline stands confused. She leaves Neil behind, descending the stairs again. As Beaumont watches her, Neil regains consciousness and sits up. Legendre notices Madeline and looks back toward Neil getting his bearings, then standing when he spots Madeline running past Legendre. She runs out of the room as Neil runs down the stairs. She rushes downstairs to a landing outside. Lost, she steps to the edge of a cliff and turns, staring blankly around. Neil makes it down to the landing as Madeline draws closer to the cliff.
Madeline.
He runs to her and pulls her back.
Madeline, I found you. You're alive. Alive.
Legendre comes down the stairs.
What's the matter? It's I, Neil.
As Legendre reaches the landing behind them, Neil holds Madeline, then leads her to a bench, where they sit. She keeps staring into space.
Oh, my darling. What have they done to you?
Legendre curls his fingers together, and some of his zombie minions come down the stairs behind him. Spotting them, Neil stands and watches. As he approaches Legendre, more zombies enter from other directions.
Who are you? And what are they?
For you, my friend, they are the angels of death.
Neil backs away, and as the zombies come closer, he pulls out a gun. He shoots Chauvin in the chest, but it has no effect. Standing very close to the edge, he tries again, but they keep converging on him. Meanwhile, another figure approaches. It's Dr. Brunner, who steps behind Legendre and clubs him in the head, knocking him out. Neil faces Von Gerder, trying not to fall off the cliff. Neil bends down and crawls between them out of harm's way, and the zombies keep walking forward. Von Gerder walks off the cliff. Then Marquis. Chauvin walks off the cliff, followed by another zombie. And finally, Ledeau. With Neil at his feet, Dr. Brunner notices Madeline, who stands glancing around. He points her out to Neil. Confused, she sits down again. Neil gets up and rushes to her. Sitting beside her, he takes her hand as Brunner approaches them. Madeline turns to Neil. She stares blankly at him. But a shadow is lifted from her vision. And she starts to smile. Brunner looks on, amazed, as she reaches up to touch Neil's face. Meanwhile, Legendre comes too. Madeline turns from Neil with her stare returned. Legendre gets to his feet.
Madeline, don't you know me, dear? It's Neil.
I could swear. For a moment she recognized you.
Brunner spots Legendre heading for the stairs.
Come on, don't let him get away.
When Neil and Brunner go after him, he stops on the stairs and pulls something from a vest pocket. Then he throws it down, setting off a smoke bomb that stops them. Then he curls his fingers together again as a shadow descends behind him. Neil and Brunner glance up from their coughing as the shadow gets closer, while the vulture watches nearby. Beaumont staggers behind Legendre, who is deep in concentration. Beaumont throws himself at him, pushing him over the edge. Legendre plummets past the cliffs to the shore far below. Beaumont loses his balance and goes over too. As the vulture flies off, Neil returns to Madeline. She looks around, confused. Then starts and turns again to him.
Madeline, my darling.
Her stare becomes a gaze, and she smiles again. Neil gazes back uncertainly.
Neil, I dream.
Relieved, he holds her, and as they move to kiss, Neil gets tapped on the shoulder by Brunner, who holds up his pipe.
Excuse me, please. Have you got a match?
The End, described for Movies for the Blind. And that was White Zombie, which, yes, people of my generation, was the inspiration for the rock band of the same name. Fortunately for Neil, movie zombies would take decades to get faster, more determined, and hungry for brains. Coming up, as people start to recover, or not, from the U.S. presidential election, our next movie was inspired by a challenge from one of the greatest presidents ever, who's been quoted more than a few times lately, for good reason, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
I'm sending Blake to Washington to kill that Senator Gilmore's crackpot legislation.
Mr. Sartre's phoned, sir, to congratulate you on your victory. He wishes to see you tomorrow in the office.
Oh, he does. But he won't. This time I am going fishing.
Yeah, where did you catch that trout?
Didn't catch it. Charlie Brown gave it to me.
About those fish.
Tell it to the game warden.
Oh, no, but please, allow me to...
Stay quiet.
If Congress had passed the Trades Reconstruction Bill, I could have loaned you the money, the government would have insured the loan, and 1,500 of you men and women would have been earning a living again.
When the cannery had to close, it broke my father's heart. It killed him.
Your real enemies are racketeers like National Canneries. Who defeated the Trades Reconstruction Bill, Miss Brown? Oh, dozens of high-priced lobbyists.
So, you see, all the machinery's really in fine shape, and it wouldn't cost much to get started. That is, if we did it on a cooperative basis.
Is that what you intended doing?
Yes, if the TRC bill had gone through. You know, hard work would make a new man out of you. It's not funny. Fighting National wouldn't be any joke.
Oh, wouldn't it? You know, I'm beginning to like the idea better every minute.
Have you ever thought of disappearing?
Disappear? Why, no, sir. Once at a vaudeville show, sir, I saw a man grieve over the grave.
I don't mean anything like that. I don't mean disappearing into thin air.
That's The President's Mystery, next time on Movies for the Blind. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The movies are from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast. So please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.